Birkas of Eliezer, Perek Lamed Vav. We're holding in the middle of the Perek. We're speaking about the story of Yaakov Avinu, and last week we spoke about Yaakov Avinu marrying Rachel and Leah, and the whole story with his shidduch by the well, meaning Lavan. Now we're going to speak about the birth of Yaakov Avinu's kids, and then we're going to speak about Yaakov and his family running away from Lavan's household. We're up to the words of Bilevi Aymer. Levi Aymer, Rav Levi says, Roh HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'tzorasa Shel Leah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw the sorrow of Leah. Right? Because we know that Yaakov Avinu originally wanted to marry Rachel, and then he ended up marrying Leah because he was tricked, and then he actually married Rachel. Right? So really, the one that he loved more, Yaakov Avinu loved Rachel more. But he happened to be that he was married to Leah. So Leah felt tsar because of that. She felt suffering and sorrow because of that. Benasan la, so what did Hashem do? Hashem saw this suffering that Leah had. Benasan la, harion beten v'nichumim lenafsha. The Radal says that this suffering that we're talking about of Leah, it's not that Yaakov Avinu did something bad to her. It's that she just felt that mitzvah herself, she felt suffering because she saw that Yaakov Avinu was treating Rachel better than her. But it's not that Yaakov Avinu did something wrong, Inui, to her. That's what the Radal points out. Okay, so what did Hashem do? Nosam laheria in peten. Hashem gave her pregnancy of the stomach. V'nichumim l'nafsha. And that was a consolation for her soul that Leah was able to become pregnant and have children, and Rachel didn't right away. And the Radal says that this nechama, the consolation for herself that she was able to have children and Rachel wasn't that because she had children and Rachel didn't, so now Yaakov Avinu started liking Leah more than Rachel. No, he always liked Rachel more than Leah. Yaakov Avinu didn't change his mind. But rather, now that Leah has children, so she was busy with her children, and her children were able to give her nachas and make her happy and play with the children. So then she didn't feel as bad about the fact that Yaakov Avinu loved Rachel more than he loved her. V'yalda ish toiv tayar v'chocham. And Leah gave birth to an ish toiv tayar v'chocham. He was a man of toiv tayar, of good form. He looked good, v'chocham, and he was wise. V'amra, and she said, Ru'u bein shenasan le'Kadosh Baruch Hu. See the son that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me. Shnema, it says in the Pasuk, Fatahar Leah v'telet bein. Leah became pregnant and she gave birth to a son. Fatikra Shemai Ruvain, and she called his name Ruvain. But Alkin Kara Shemai Ruvain, and the Medrash says that's why she called his name Ruvain. Look at my son. Oh, he's so good looking. He's such a smart person. Oh, it's a chashuv thing, and she was very happy with it. Chazal in Brachas, I think Rashi and Chumash brings this down. It says Chazal said in Brachas, Dav Zayin, why is it called Ruvain? Ruma Bein Beni Levin Chami. She's saying, look at the difference between my son, Reuven, who's like a good person, and the son of my mother-in-law, of Rivka, who she had a son named Esav, who was a horrible person. So, according to the Gemara, the term Reuven is sort of bringing out that contrast between Reuven and Esav. Why dafka Reuven and Esav? I don't know. Why more so than the other Shvatim? Maybe because Reuven was the firstborn and Esav was the firstborn. Yeah. Rabbi Eliezer says, Mishivo chadoshim yolda Leah es baneha. From 7 months, Leah gave birth to her children. Ulshava shanim noldu liyakliv achadas ar shvatim uvas echos. And in 7 years, she gave birth to Yaakov Avinu, was given birth to Yaakov Avinu 11 Shvatim and one daughter, meaning 11 sons and one daughter. So same things. Rachel was saying that Leah would give birth at 7 months, that all her kids were born at 7 months, they weren't complete terms, they didn't go to 9 months, went 7 months, and they were healthy. Like the Gemara always says that we assume that a child could be born, there's two types of children that are born, either Ben Shiva or Ben Tesha. A healthy child will be born either at 7 months or at 9 months. And the Gemara assumes that at 8 months, That was the belief that if a child is born at 8 months, it's considered, it's very dangerous, and it could be a nephil, it's going to be stillborn, whatever. But 7 months and 9 months, that could be healthy. So we're saying over here that Leah was able to give birth, all of her children were born at 7 months, not at 9 months. And that's the first chiddush. And then the second chiddush we're saying is that all, or at least the 11 shvatim, meaning all of Yaakov Avinu's sons except for Binyamin, so the first 11 shvatim, plus Dina, the Bas Achas is Dina, were all born within a span of 7 years. They were all born within a span of 7 years. Right? So Yaakov Avinu basically they were all born within a span of 7 years. Exactly how to make that cheshbin, so I was actually thinking of making a chart for you guys of how to do it, but I didn't have time to do it, but it's a little bit tedious. There's different midrashim and different rishonim and sources about it, exactly how to make a cheshbin of like which sons were born in the same year, what exactly is the order, even though from the psukim it sounds like it's pretty pashut what the birth order of Yaakov Avinu's kids were, but lamaisa there are svarim that bring the order slightly differently. So it's a little bit, somewhat of a complicated sugya. Another complicating factor is that there's midrashim that tell us what months of the year Yaakov Avinu's sons were born in. So then you'll have to cheshbon, okay, if he was born in that month, he was born in that month, like which year he was born in, and how exactly everything fits together. A bit of b'chaye, medrash tache, all these different svarim bring about which months. Because we know there's, Yaakov Avinu had 12 shvatim, so you could say that the 12 shvatim correspond to 12 months. And then like each one was born only in one month, it gets complicated. Menashe and Ephraim also could be have their own month. So whatever, we'll leave it at that. Fine, says the medrash. B'cholon noeldu zivugon imam. And all of the shvatim who was born with them, their zivug, their soulmate, their match, their shidduch was born with them. Because the Gemara says, the Medrash, Bereishis Rabba, brings the machlekes. Who did the sons of Yaakov Avinu marry? Who did the shvatim marry? So Bereishis Rabba says, machlekes. Either they married their twin sisters who were born with them, just like we find, let's say, by Cain and Hevel, they married their twin sisters. So we say, also the Shvatim married their twin sisters. Or do we say that the Shvatim married Canaanites? They married Canaanite women from the locals. You have to say for Yashar has like a slightly different mahalach. Say for Yashar says that they also got married to other women from the extended family of Avraham Avinu, meaning not twin sisters and not Canaanites, but people from, let's say, Aram and whatever. But the main two mahalchim in the Bereishis Rabba is either they married their twin sisters or they married the Canaanites. Well, maybe we'll speak about that more a little bit at a different time. Al Kaponim, so each of the Shvatim that was born with a twin sister with them. Each of Yaakov's kids was born with their zivug with them, with their spouse with them. Chutz, says the Medrash, except for Yosef. Because Yosef's spouse was not born with him. Because Asnas, the daughter of Dina, meaning the Pasuk says that Yosef, explicitly the Pasuk says that Yosef married a woman called Asnas Bas Potiphera. Yosef married someone named Asnas Bas Potiphera, right? So who is this Asnas Bas Potiphera? So the Medrash over here, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, is going to say it later on in Perek Lamed Ches. The Medrash is going to say that Asnas Bas Potiphera was really the daughter of Dina. And we'll speak about that when we get there. But Yosef ended up marrying the daughter of Dina. So that's why Yosef's shidduch wasn't born with him, because he wasn't supposed to marry one of his sisters, he was supposed to marry one of his sister's daughters. Okay, that's one exception of one of Yaakov Avinu's children whose spouse wasn't born with them. V'chutz midina. And also, except for Dina, Yaakov Avinu had a daughter, Dina, she was the daughter of Leah. Shalai nola zivuga ima. Dina's husband, because Dina was a girl, right? So Dina's husband wasn't born with her. She was born alone. Amra, Leah said, Hayalda hazayis, this girl, din umishpat hi. She is din, justice, right? She's din, justice, and mishpat is also a lashon of justice. Al-Kain Karashima Dina. And that's why Leah named her Dina. Dina is like a lashon of Din. So she's saying that because her spouse wasn't born with her, so she's like Din, so I'm going to name her Din. She has to do with judgment, so I'm going to call her Din. What's the Indian over here? So the Marzu explains it like this. He says that the idea is that when we've spoken about this idea before in Parak Chaf Aleph, probably even earlier, I don't remember exactly where, we spoke about the idea of Olam Chesed Yibane. B'Chesed Nivra HaOlam, the world was created with Chesed, Olam Chesed Yibane. What does that mean? It means that the first people in the world, I mean, besides Adam and Chava, but the first people in the world who were born, let's say, they ended up getting married to their sisters. Cain married his sister, Hevel married his sister, right? His twin sister. So the world was built on a marriage between a man and his sister. And the Pasuk in Tehillim calls it Chesed. The world was built on Chesed. Why is that called Chesed? So we spoke about then that it technically would be a big Chesed for a man to marry his sister because he's going to help her out and take achrayus for her, etc. But the Torah said that you're not allowed to marry your sister, right? So that's why it's called a Chesed. So over here, by all the Shvatim, so each one of the Shvatim was born with them their spouse. So Mimela, that's called Chesed. But when we're talking about Dina, so Dina was born without her husband with him. She was born on her own. So there by Dina there wasn't a kium of Chesed. It wasn't Chesed and Ribbana, married his sister. So Mimela, that's what the Medrash is saying. That's why she called her Dina. Because the opposite of Chesed is Din. But we spoke about before that Chesed is the idea of giving off, being mashpia, of giving off influence. And din is the idea of either holding back influence or focusing on the receiving end of getting influence. But the idea of din is the withholding of or gevurah is the idea of holding back the influence. So din is the exact opposite of chesed. So because there's no chesed over here, so Leah called her Dina because of the lack of chesed. That's one idea. The Radal makes another interesting point. It says, one second, we're talking about two people. Two exceptions through. We said all of Yaakov and his children were born with their zivug with them, right? So Yosef was born without a zivug, and Dina was born without a zivug. And we said this based on the idea, let's say, that we just said before, that the idea is that because there wasn't a brother and sister that were born together that were gonna get married. So that's which is chesed, because that didn't happen by Dina. So we called her Dina, which is the lashon of din. So asks the Radal, so why didn't we do that by, why didn't they call Yosef something that has to do with Din? Why Dafka Dina? Yosef also has the same thing, there's a lack of Chesed over here. That's what the Radal asks. So Radal says like this, first of all, even though the Medrash, when it's bringing down these two exceptions, it says Yosef and then it says Dina, but the truth is, it's really backwards. First Dina was born and then Yosef was born, right? So Radal explained that when Dina was first born without her zivuk, so we said, oh, that's a chisarn chesed, because there's no one for her, she doesn't have a brother to marry, so we'll call her Din. Then when Yosef was born, we don't have that problem anymore, because so wait, Dina was born without a brother, Yosef was born without a sister, so okay, we have a chesed. We'll just put Yosef and Dina together, which to some extent is really what happened. Like the Medrash says, that Yosef married a daughter of Dina, so by Yosef it's not a problem that the Din, because you said that Yosef will pair with Dina, but when Dina was born and there was no Yosef, then that was a chisarn and chesed, so we called her a lashon of Din. The other pshat the Radal says is that it's a remez to the idea that in the future there's going to be dinim, justice, that is going to be brought upon Shechem and the whole city over there because of what they're going to do to Dina. So through her, justice is going to be brought down to the world, so therefore she's called Dina, which alludes to the idea of justice. I wanted to tell maybe a slightly different vart, that even if you want to say that the problem was by both Dina and by Yosef, so why didn't Rachel call Yosef something that had to do with Din, with justice? So if you look in the Pesukim, why did Rachel call Yosef Yosef? So it says in the Pesuk, she says, Asaf elkim ischar posi, Hashem gathered away my embarrassment, Vatikra shmo Yosef, she called him Yosef, Leimar, Yosef Hashem li bein acher, Hashem should, Yosef, he should add for me another son. Why does she say that? Why did Rachel say that Hashem should add for her another son? So Rashi explains that she knew through Nevuah that Yaakov was destined to have 12 sons, and this was the 11th kid, right? Leah had already given birth to 6. Leah had already given birth to 6, and then there was Gad and Asher, Dan and Naphtali, which was from Bilha, and then Gad and Asher, which was from Zilpah, and now, you know, Yosef, that's 10, and then Yosef is 11. Where's the 12th one? Who's going to be with the 12th one? So Rachel was davening to Hashem that she should be the mother of the 12th kid and not one of the other Imahis, one of Yaakovino's other wives. So she said when she was giving the name of Yosef, she was desperate. She had to give a name that will be in Ramis to the fact that she wants to have another kid. So she said, Yosef Hashem, li ben acher. Hashem should add me another kid. Even though it could be true, there's another element of Yosef that could be has to do with Dinim. But this idea was so important to her that she had to focus tafka on that. Fine. Let's go weiter. V'oid haya Rabbi Eliezer Eimer. Rabbi Eliezer also used to say another thing about the topic of Yaakov and Lavan. Now this is going more towards the end of Parshas Vayetze. Barach Yaakov Lavay el Lavan, u'barach Lotzis mipnei Lavan. Yaakov Avinu ran away to go to Lavan, and Yaakov Avinu ran away to go away from Lavan. He ran away to Lavan, and he ran away from Lavan. Right? Barach Lavay el Lavan. Yaakov Avinu ran away to go to Lavan. Minayin, where do we know it from? Shneimar. It says in the Pasuk, the opening words of the Haftarah of Parshas Vayetze. It says, Vayivrach Yaakov, Zdei Aram. Yaakov Avinu ran away to the Zdei Aram, to the field of Aram. Right? Because Esav was going to decide he wants to kill him, so Yaakov Avinu ran away. Where did he run to? He went to Lavan. It's interesting. I don't know why the Medrash decided to choose a pasuk in Sefer Hosea, that says that Yaakov Avinu ran away to there. I'm pretty sure the pasuk says it. In the end of Parshas Tolos, when it says that Yaakov Avinu is running away from Esav, it doesn't really say that he's running away. The only place where it says the lashon of running away is when Rivka tells Yaakov, "Kum brach lecha elavan achi charana." But then later on, when it says that he actually does it, it says that Yitzchok sent Yaakov to go there. It doesn't say that he ran away. Okay, but it could have still brought that pasuk of "Kum brach lecha elavan achi charana." I'm not sure why the manager decided to bring this pasuk in Hosea. Barach mipnei Lavan minayin. Where do we find that Yaakov Avinu ran away because of Lavan? Shneimar, it says in the pasuk, Vayugad leLavan bayom haShlishi ki varach Yaakov. It was told to Lavan on the third day that Yaakov Avinu ran away. What's this talking about? So we know this story that Yaakov Avinu was working for Lavan at some point. You know, they made different deals of how many sheep Yaakov gets paid with, what types of sheep, and Lavan kept messing him over. Aseres Mainim, which means that he messed him over, cheated him out about 100 times. Something like that. There's different sfarim written about how exactly to Cheshbin 100 times that Lavan cheated Yaakov. But he cheated him in 100 different ways. Lavan cheated Yaakov Avinu in 100 different ways. And then Yaakov Avinu gets the word from Hashem, and Hashem tells Yaakov Avinu, you know, I think it's time for you to go back to your family, go back to Eretz Yisrael. Right, the pasuk says, what's the lashon of the pasuk? The pasuk says, "Vayir Hashem al Yaakov, shuv al Eretz Avisecha ulamoyladetcha ve'heyei imach." Hashem says to Yaakov, "Return to the land of your fathers and to the place where you're born, and I will be with you." And then Yaakov gathers Rachel and Leah in the field, and he tells them, you know, Hashem told us we should go back, so like maybe we should go back, and they're like, yeah, let's go back. Right? So then they run away in the middle of the night, they ran away when Lavan was going to cut his sheep. He ran away, he took everything with him, and he started going back to Eretz Yisrael. And then it was told to Lavan on the third day that Yaakov Avinu ran away, and then Lavan chased after them and eventually caught up to them. Fine. V'lama barach. So why did Yaakov even run away? So we just said, because the pasuk says, "Sh'amar le'kadosh baruch hu," Hashem said to him, "Yaakov, Yaakov, eini yochai l'shakin shchinosi alacha b'chutz la'aretz. Yaakov, I cannot rest my presence upon you in the diaspora and outside of Eretz Yisrael. I can't rest my presence upon you. Ela shuv l'aretz avisecha ve'ehyei imach." Rather, go back to the land of your forefathers and the land where you were born, and I'll be with you. If you go back there, then I'll be with you. If you don't go back there, Yaakov, I can't promise that I'll be with you anymore. Therefore, Yaakovinu ran away. So until this point, Hashem was with Yaakovinu, even though he was in Chutz Lars. And now Hashem is saying to y'all, I'm fed up, so I don't want to be with you anymore unless you go back to Eretz Yisrael. Is that what happened?
I don't know. I was thinking about it. It says the pasuk in Ayin Yachodesh, the Shakan Shkenasi Yolecha Bechutz La'aretz. Is it a nusach acher?
Ah.
Bebeis Lavan.
Bebeis Lavan. Right. That's true. It says Beis Lavan.
While you're there, maybe you were just telling us about how Lavan was, trying to
trick him,
and cheat him, and maybe he was very,
he was influenced by him slightly.
No, not influenced. It's just like in a tear there. No, he was always trying to get away from him. And it's a man that has a mind set in something, he wasn't calm. He wasn't quiet enough to receive the shina, maybe, because it says Hashem. What verse is possible?
That's the Medrash, that's the Lashon of the Medrash.
There's Lashon of the Medrash, it's not possible. This is very interesting. So the Eini Yachol, what is Hashem saying? That I can't?
When Hashem says I can't, that means I don't want to.
Yeah.
Right. I just think, I'm remembering now.
You're not going to be able to receive the Shechina when you're not going to be able to receive the Shechina while they're here. You have to go somewhere else.
Right.
You can't focus because God's trying to trick you, it bothers you, and whatever.
I'm just remembering now when I was many years ago when I was in LA.
I don't know if it's related.
Many years ago when I was in LA, so we used to have the Menahal in the Yeshiva, and Yeshiva Gedolah San, his name was Shlomo Zalman Howard. So his father in law, his name was Blazer Levy. He was the Menahal of Tel's Yeshiva. I think he was originally American. I'm not sure if he's American or not. But he spoke with an old European accent. So he used to come give us Musar Shmuzim on Fridays. So I don't remember most of what he said. But I remember a part that he said, Parshas Vayetze, that has to do with this. When Yaakovinu was talking to Rachel and Leah, that he wants to go, so he told them that First he said to them, that your father is cheating me out. But he's not treating me like he used to. He's cheating me out of the money, whatever. And Hashem keeps helping me out and saving me. And then he says, "Vayhi ba'is yachem atzoyin v'asa enai va'er b'chalayim." Then Yaakovin is telling his wives about his dream. And one time I was, the tzoyin were outside in the heat, whatever. And I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream. What do I see? I see the spots coming onto the sheep, and they were going, and the spots were coming and going. Rashi says that he saw that the malachim were moving the sheep from Lavan's side to his side, and they were playing around with it, whatever. But he had this whole dream about the sheep. And then I saw a Malach in the dream, and the Malach said, "Yaakov," and I said, "Here I am." And the Malach said to him, "Look at all these things. Look at all these things that Hashem that Hashem is doing for you. I am Hashem that you made a promise that you're gonna go offer sacrifices to Him on the Matzeva by Beisil. So I'm telling you, go back to your land." That's what Yaakovinu tells him. So Ishael is like, "What's this whole funny thing with a dream with the sheep and what's happening over here?" So Blazer Levy said like this. Besides, what really pushed Yaakov Avinu into leaving the house of Lavan? It was this dream. So he wants to say like this. We know that Yaakov Avinu, until was early, let's say before he came to the house of Lavan, was so focused on Limud Torah. We spoke about that. He learned in the yeshiva of Shem Be'Eber for 14 years before he came to the house of Lavan. After he left his father's house, he went to Shem Be'Eber for 14 years and then went to Lavan. And then after, on his way to Lavan, the pasuk says, "Vayigah b'makom v'yolim." Yaakov slept in that place by the, where he's going to have the story with the ladder. Right? Says Rashi, he slept in that place. Why is he saying he slept in that place? It's coming to tell you that only in that place did he sleep. But for the last 14 years when he was learning in Shiva of Shem Haever, he didn't go to sleep at night. He was learning until he fell asleep, and then he would fall asleep, gather his kechas, and then continue learning when he woke up, etc. He never like officially went to go to sleep. Over here, he officially went to go to sleep. So you see that Yaakovin was so focused on his learning. And that's the idea of Yaakovin, Yoshev Aholim. He was sitting in the tent. He lived in the Beis Medrash. Yoshev Aholim lived in the Beis Medrash. Right? Now, okay, fine. So he had to go out and make a parnasa. So he was working for Lavan. He was doing what he had to do. But in his mind, he was focused on his limud Torah. Right? So Gemara in Bracha says, when most of the dreams that you see are dreams of things that you think about during the day. Right? So Mistama, what happened was that even though when Yaakov was working for Lavan, so most of the dreams that he saw, he was still dreaming about Torah because he was thinking about Torah the whole time while he was working for Lavan as a shepherd. Right. At some point, he became mushpa from Yaakov Avinu that now he was dreaming about sheep. And they went, wait a second, now I'm dreaming about sheep, that's dangerous. Now I'm already becoming like Lavan, I'm already losing my focus, I'm dreaming about sheep. So then he's like, okay, now it's time for me to get out of here.
But he
goes
with
what
he said
in
the second broken. Because most of the dreams are made of things that he saw during the day.
Not that
he saw. Okay.
Is this the part that Reb Blazer Levy, the Menahal of Tzal's Yeshiva, said over? So maybe that's the idea over here, that like Hashem is telling Yaakov, like, if you stay, I can't be with you anymore because you're losing your focus. If you leave now, you know, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, so then Eyei Yimach.
You lose the focus on Torah.
Yeah. Sure. Maybe. Fine. What? V'lokach lovon as kol anshei vesei v'iroi giborei choyach v'rodaf acharav l'horgoi. Lavan took all of the members of his household and all the people of his city and all the strong people, and he chased after Yaakov Avinu in order to kill him. Yared Michael v'sholach cherev acharav uvikesh arbei. So Hashem sends along the malach Michael, the angel Michael, and he whips out his sword and he comes after Lavan to go kill Lavan because Lavan wants to kill Yaakov Avinu. This is also brought in Targum Yenison. So the Malach tells Lavan, "Al tadaber im Yaakov mitoy v'abra." Don't speak to Yaakovinu neither for good neither for bad. Just leave Yaakovinu alone. Shneema says the pasuk vayoba elikim Lavan ha'arami b'chalim alayla. Hashem appeared to the Lavan Arami, the Aramean Lavan, in a dream at night, and Hashem said to him, "You know, don't bother Yaakovinu."
Interesting.
Hishkim Lavan b'abaker. Lavan woke up in the morning, v'ra'a es klasher le'Yaakov, and he saw everything that Yaakovina had. He caught up to Yaakovina's camp, and he saw all the things that Yaakovina had, all the sheep, and the people, and the servants, etc. V'amar lo'i, and he said to Yaakovina, kol elo mishalihu, all these things that you have, mishalihu, you took it from me, it's really mine, you stole all my stuff. Hayo v'lakaktas kol elo, if you're going to take all these things, why did you steal my God? I'm not sure exactly what the hemshech is. I think it's like, and even if you're going to take all these things from me, you stole all my everything in my house, but why did you take my God? At least you should have left my God over there. What's that, my God, the Elihoi? Says the Medrash, as hatrofim shli, my trofim, shayisi mishtachav alehem, that I used to bow down to them. You took my trofim. Right, the pasuk says earlier that Rachel, when they were leaving, so it says that v'tigna Rachel sa trofim asher leaviha. Rachel took the trofim which belonged to her father. So now Lavan is coming along and complaining. Why did you steal my God? Meaning, why did you steal these trofim? And now we're going to go into a whole discussion over here about what are trofim. What is Trufim? How do you make Trufim? What do Trufim do? Etc. The Ibn Ezra in Parshas Vayetze, before we get to what the Medrash over here says, we'll have to, a few other sources to speak about. The Medrash, the Ibn Ezra brings three explanations. The first pshat that the Ibn Ezra says is that Trufim are some sort of timekeeping device. It's like some sort of watch or something like that. Other Rishonim also say this. It's like some sort of watch or something like to keep track of time. So the question is, if that's what Trufim is, so why is Lavan saying, Lama ganapta lehoi? Why did you steal my God? Why is a watch a God? Okay, so I saw one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Yehuda ibn Chalava, he has a pirish on Chumash Bereishis called Imri Shefer. So he speaks about this. He says that because Lavan relied so much on his watch, so it was like so important to him that he looked at it as if it was like his God. So he's like, why did you steal my God? Because like his watch was like his whole life. Okay, that's a pshat. The Ibn Ezra says a second pshat. What's Trufim? He says, Trufim are something that like, it was some sort of like forms or images that you make at certain times that has to do with astrology, and it could tell you about the future. Speaking images, speaking statues, or something like that. And then Ibn Ezra says a third pshat. He says that Trufim are images or statues of people. And these images or statues of people, or mannequins, they're supposed to be able to receive koichas from the upper world or from Hashem or whatever, and they could tell the future and have superpowers or whatever. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. And the Ibn Ezra brings a proof to this from Psukim in Sefer Shmuel. Sefer Shmuel, Aleph, Perek, Yotes, it's talking about David Melech and Shaul Melech were having some sort of little rivalry over there, and Shaul decided that he wants to go kill David. So Michal, who is a daughter of Shaul and also a wife of David, so she wanted to save David. So what does she do? She tells David that they're going to come tonight and kill you, so you should run away. So he runs away, and it says, "Vatikach Michal as a trofim." Michal took the trofim and she put them on David Melech's bed, and then she covered it with like his blanket. And then when they came to check, like they thought he was still there, so like you know they didn't realize that he ran away, but really he was long gone. And she said that he was sick or whatever. Yeah. So what are these trofim over here? So says the Ibn Ezra, well, it's evident from these psukim that the trufim are something that are like in the shape of a human being, because they thought that the trufim was him. It was like some sort of mannequin or something. So you see that's what trufim is. It's like a shape of a human being. Rashi, in like four or five places in Tanakh, if you put them all together, Rashi basically goes like the last two explanations of the Ibn Ezra. One, that it's a form of a person, like Rashi and Shmuel says, explicitly, that it's a form of a person, and also it's a form of a person. But you have to make it at a certain time, and it'll have like different supernatural koichas that it could talk or tell the future or whatever. Stam, the Mefarshim speak about exactly why did Governor Melech have Trufim in his house? Like if Trufim, it seems like if it's some sort of tool used for divination or for Avodah Zarah to tell the future, to get these objects to speak. So like why would David HaMelech have such things in his house? So Bar Benaz says that it wasn't these Trufim in the Sefer Shmuel weren't used for those purposes. It was used either for Michal to look at, so like she could enjoy looking at the pictures of her husband. Another pshat is, I don't remember what it was. One of the Mefarsha says that it was like decorative, to decorate the house. It wasn't like a Avodah Zarah dick. Okay. So there's another Rashi in Sefer Melachim Beis, Perek Chav Gimel, Pasuk Chav Dalet. Over there mentions Trufim as well. And when talking about Yoshiyahu getting rid of the Trufim, so Rashi says, what are Trufim? Tsurois. In pictures or images, shemidaber malidei kshafim, that speak through witchcraft. V'ha'aisayisan tzorich l'chavin sho'achas b'shana, and whoever makes them, he has to intend to do so at 1 hour of a year. V'shana achas ruay l'kach, and only 1 year is fitting for it. That's what Rashi says. There's like 1 hour of the year that you could tap into these energies, and then you can make such a thing. And otherwise, it doesn't work. So then Rashi says, "B'shana achas b'ilakach," and 1 year is fitting for it. So I don't know what that means. 1 year is fitting for it. I found a different gear set that says "Shah achas b'ilakach." 1 hour is fitting, which is a little bit difficult because we just said that it's only 1 hour of a year. So then why are we saying again 1 hour? I spoke to a friend of mine who looked up different manuscripts of Rashi, and he says that it's not those. It takes out those words. Shana achas b'ilakach are extra words in the Rashi. All the printed editions of Rashi and Sefer Malachim have those words, but it's a mistake. Okay, so we know a little bit now of what Trufim are. At least from Rashi and Ibn Ezra and these different Mefarshim. And again, we said that Rachel stole the Trufim, and then Lavan said, "Lama ganata selechai? Why did you steal my God?" Right? So you see that Lavan called it a God. Lavan called the Trufim a God. So the Ibn Ezra understands, and actually it's explicit in the Zohar, in Parshas Vayetze, page Kuf Samach Tal Aleph Amud Beis, it says that Trufim was Avodah Zarah, it was Mamash Avodah Zarah. The Ramban says in Chumash that it was Lav Dafka Avodah Zarah itself, it was some sort of Kishuf or Kesem, which is like magic, that could lead a person to Avodah Zarah because you could see other forces that do things, but it wasn't Avodah Zarah itself. But here you see that he said, "Why did you steal my God?" It sounds like he understood that his Trufim was actually a God. Oh, one more.
Lavan was so into it, he lost break off. Yeah. Lost the boundaries, and now
it could be. He was so into it that he started thinking. That's something. The Ramban says something like that. That people who have katnei amuna or something like that, they lose focus and then they get so into what they're doing that like they forget about Hashem, they don't bother praying to Hashem, whatever. Even if they batsim would believe in it, like could be their own, that love and batsim believed in Hashem, just that why should I bother davening or being a good person? I'll just deal with the Trufim and they'll help. They'll take care of whatever I need for me. What's the lashon of Trufim? So over here you have the Bais HaGadol. He brings two pshatim. One is the Ramban. The Ramban says the Trufim is like a lashon of rafui, like weak. So Ramban says that because the Trufim would give a nevuah rafa, a weak nevuah. The way the Ramban explains it is that most of the time the Trufim would be telling the truth. Whatever the words would the Trufim would speak would be the truth. It would be like a nevuah. And sometimes the Trufim would lie to you and tell you something that's false. So it's like a weak nevuah, because it's like sort of like a nevuah, but it's weak, because like you don't know if it's real or if it's not real. Well, other Rishonim actually say the similar things.
It could be tricked by the trick.
Yeah. Some Rishonim say similar things to the Ramban, but they say the opposite. The right of the time it says sheker, and sometimes it's true. That's why it's called weak nevuah. The other pshat, the Bais HaGadol brings this, it's also Zohar, and it's also Medrash Seichel Tov. But why is it called Trufim? It's like a lashon of Beis HaTurfus, the place of the dirtiness. It's like dirty, like that's like impure, it's evil. Like Trufim is like disgusting. That's the lashon of Trufim. Okay, so let's see what the Medrash over here, Pirkei Blazer, has to say about Trufim. This is interesting stuff. Omahina Trufim. What are Trufim? Says the Medrash. Sheikhtin Adam Bukhar. You slaughter a firstborn human, right? Umolkin is Reishai, and then you do Malika to him. What's the difference between Shechita and Malika? As the Marzuk points out, Shechita is where you cut his neck from the front, and Malika is where you cut his neck from the back. So first you cut his neck from the front, then you cut his neck from the back, right? We're talking about a human firstborn. Umolkin Reishai, and then you salt his head, b'melach uveshemen. You salt it with salt and with oil. And in Targum Yonasan it says also with besamim, with spices. And also the Yalkut, when it brings this Pirkei Avos, it also says with spices. You salt it with spices. V'kosvid al tzitz zahav shem ruach tuma. And then you write on a gold plate. You write the name of a tumah spirit, the evil spirit. And then you take that gold plate and you put it inside the mouth of this of this firstborn that you slaughtered his head underneath his tongue. Let's say for Yashar Gada says that you could use either a gold or a copper plate to write this. And in Sefer Yashar, it's mashma that you write a name of Hashem. Not that you write a name of like some sort of Ruach Tuma, but you write a name of Hashem. And in Targum Yonasan, it just says like you write like magical writings. It doesn't say exactly what it is. B'nei Bakir. And then you take this head and you put it on the wall. You affix it to the wall. U'madlikin Neris Lefanov. And you light candles in front of it. U'mishtachavim Loib. And then you bow down to it. And then he speaks to you. In Medrash Tanchuma, in Parshas Vayetze, Simon Yud Beis, when it brings this down, it says Medaris Abalahash. It speaks to you quietly, or it would speak quietly. Which I have a whole shtick of Torah what I spoke about once. Why Dafka is magic spoken quietly? But I don't want to get into that right now. But it would speak to you quietly. How do you know that Trophim speak? It says in the Pasuk, Trophim dibru oven. Because the Trophim speak of nothingness. So you see the Trophim speak. Just that the Navi in that Pasuk, Zechariah, was sort of bashing them and saying that they speak, but they speak like nothingness. Fine. So that the idea of how to make Trophim 101, how to make Trophim for dummies. That's what you do. You take a firstborn human, you cut off his head, you salt it, etc., all these things, and then you write on a gold plate the name of Hashem, the name of a Ruach Tumah, put it in the mouth, and then it speaks. That's...
No, that's a
bow to it. And you have to bow to it, and whatever, yeah. Another Nakuda... It's like a whole ceremony, it's a whole rite. Yeah. It's like these satanic rituals or whatever, where you have to do all these like weird funny things. The way I understand it is that just it's like Zelo Mazel Asalikim. Hashem makes this corresponding to this. One against the other. Kedusha against Tumah. Kedusha. So like if you want, what's the side of Kedusha? To be able to tell the future with Kedusha is a Navi. A Navi, if you do mitzvahs and you make yourself into a good person and you do all the right things, so then Hashem brings the Shekhinah upon you and then you get a spirit of Nevuah. Right? So if you want to do the opposite, you want to tap into the spirit of evil, the spirit of Kechas Tumah, so you have to do the opposite. So what's the opposite? The opposite is you have to do Averis. You do so many Averis that you become like an evil person yourself. Instead of getting Kedusha and Tyra, you get Tumah and dirtiness, and then that makes it that you could like get more Shaychas with those things. So like, what's like the worst Avera that a person could do? It's like one of the worst Averis a person could do is murder, right? So what's the first step if you want to make Trophim? You gotta kill somebody, you gotta kill a person, right? And then Mishtacha Velay, maybe that's some sort of... Maybe that's like Avodah Zarah, you're bowing down to it, so then you're doing two out of the big three, Avodah Zarah and Shvichas Dovim, your mamish got right there, in order to tap into these powers of evil. There's another gears of this, brought down in Sefer called Medrash Lekach Tov, which was written by Rabbi Tuvia ben Eliezer, who was he lived at the same time as Rashi, Medrash Lekach Tov. It's also known as Psikta Zutrasov, Parshas Vayetze. So he brings a slightly different story. He says what you're supposed to do is you take a red person, I don't know what that means, a red person, but you take a red person and you immerse him in oil.
A redneck.
You take a red person, you put him in oil, and then all his you leave him in oil for many days until his skin dissolves, and then you have to like pull his head in a way that like it pulls out his head with his lungs attached, and then you stand it up, and then you do certain things with Kishuf, and then it can tell you the future. That's what it says in Medrash Lekach Tov. It's like a similar ceremony, but it also involves murder. The Rekech, in Pirush Rekech al Torah and Parshas Vayetze, he brings this down slightly differently. He says that you immerse the guy not in oil but in honey, and then it says that you pull out his head in a way that not just the lungs, but also his heart is attached. Like a slightly different story over there. But more or less the same idea. Then, Pirush Rekech says another thing. another issue that another complicating issue about truffle. Yeah, he says
before you put him in oil or honey.
It doesn't say you kill him. It just says you put him there. I don't know. Maybe you put him alive. Maybe you put him dead. I don't know. It doesn't.
Horrible.
Yeah. It says like this. They have a problem because he says sometimes the truffle, when they speak, they're going to speak all kinds of funny languages and you're not going to understand the language that the Trophim is speaking to you. So you did this whole ceremony, it doesn't work, right? So how are you going to understand the Trophim? So it says they have a whole special potion that they could prepare. This mom is like medieval magical stuff. A whole potion that you could prepare that if you drink this potion, you'll be able to understand all the languages and then the Trophim can speak to you and you'll know what they're talking about.
What?
What
does it say here?
This is in the Pirshei Kechel Ter. Pirshei Kechel Ter. It says, first, what you do is, you take a red man and you tie him down. I don't know what this red man, Ish Adoim, or Adam Adoim, you take a red person. I don't know what the red person is. But you take a red person. Actually, Kreshin doesn't necessarily mean tying. Kreshin could also mean like you put a spell on him. So I'm not sure exactly how it works. And then you take a wild animal and you leave it hungry for 3 days, and then you take the wild animal and you let it nurse blood from that red person, and then you shecht the wild animal on top of a cauldron so that when you shecht it, the blood from the animal goes into this cauldron, a big pot, right? And then you cook the blood in this pot with different types of spices. And then, if you drink from that potion, you'll be able to understand the languages of the Trophim, and then it'll tell you the future.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, yeah. Double, toil and trouble. Fire burn and cauldron bubble. You know where that's from?
No.
That is from Macbeth.
Ah.
From Shakespeare. We had to memorize Shakespeare in 7th grade, I think it was. We had to memorize parts of Macbeth. I'm sure if my wife was here, she would know the whole line. Eye of toad and nail of newt. Something, and it's a whole thing. In the beginning, there's like witches that are sitting there with a cauldron and they're making like a whole potion. They're putting these funny things in it. Lahavdil, it's like the same idea. Okay. That was some interesting stuff. Fine. So these were Trophimar. Lefikach, therefore, Ginevasam Rachel. Therefore, Rachel stole these Trophim from Lavan. What do you mean, why? Why did she steal it? Two reasons. One is, Shlo Yagid LeLavan Shebarach Yaakov. So that the Trophim won't tell Yaakov Avinu the Trophim won't tell Lavan that Yaakov Avinu ran away. So Yaakov and his family had a 3-day head start until Lavan found out that they ran away. It was already 3 days after they ran away. But if Lavan would have had his Trophim home, so the Trophim would have told him, oh, by the way, your son-in-law and the whole family is running away. So Rachel stole it so that the Trophim wouldn't tell the future to him. Not only that, also she wanted to cut off the name of Avodah Zarah from the house of her father. Like the pasuk. The problem was that it was Asher La'aviha. It was the Trophim Asher La'aviha, the Trophim that belonged to her father. That's a funny way of saying it. Asher La'aviha, that was to her father. Why does it have to say that it was to her father? Because it's trying to say that the problem with the Trophim was that it belonged to her father. So she wanted to get rid of it and make it that her father's house didn't have Trophim anymore.
Maybe she's trying to say that her mother was not connected to the devil, the father.
Could be.
That's his problem. If there's another sister, another brother, you don't do it. That's the problem.
Yeah, I hear.
When you said the Afrin Shem Avodah Zarah means Jason, dear, it sounds like the whole vice used to do it. It was connected.
Right, the whole household, yeah.
The whole household was connected to
it. There's a Sefer Pirshei Binu Yosef Bechor Shor al Torah, one of the Rishonim. He lived probably in the generation after Rashi or so. He's quoted in Tesis a few places, Bali Tesis, Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor. So his Pirshei al Torah, he says, why did Rachel steal them? Because she knew that they could tell the future, therefore, chamdoson, she desired them. That's like a little bit of criticism against Rachel. Why did she take the trumpet? Because she wanted to use it for herself. That's basically what he's saying, Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor. I found another Pirsh, Ibn Kaspi, Rabbi Yosef Ibn Kaspi, also one of the Rishonim. So his pirsh on Chumash, I think it's called Mishnah Kesef, I didn't write it down. But in his pirsh on Chumash, he writes that if the person who gave the Torah, not the person, if the one who gave the Torah didn't reveal to us the reason why Rachel stole the Truffim, how can anyone come along and he would prophesize about why she did it? He makes that one comment. And I wasn't sure what did he mean by that comment. Was he trying to argue with, let's say the Medrash over here that says she stole it in order that they won't, it wouldn't tell Lavan, or she stole it to take away of Avodah Zarah from her father's house? He's arguing and saying like no, the pasuk doesn't say, so like how can you make up your own reason? Or maybe he wants to say sort of like Rabbeinu Yosef Bechor Shar, like maybe there's some, the Torah didn't say it for a reason. There's a reason why the Torah didn't want to say why Rachel stole it, because maybe, you know, it's not such a good reason. We don't want to speak bad about Rachel, so we didn't say what it was. But maybe he's saying like Rabbeinu Yosef Bechor Shar. But then again, it could be he's arguing. Maybe he saw Rabbeinu Yosef Bechor Shar who said that she stole it because she wanted it, and he's saying, how could you say such a thing? How could the Torah didn't tell us why she stole it? So why are you making up such a thing to disparage her? I'm not sure exactly what Ibn Kasbi means. You can try to play around with it a little bit. Fine. V'Yakov lo yada b'chol eila. Yaakovinu didn't know about all of this. V'Amar, and Yaakovinu said, "Call me shagana v'satrofim yomus b'lay itoy." Yaakovinu said, "Whoever stole the trofim is going to die b'lay itoy at their improper time. They're going to die early." And whatever comes out of the words of a tzaddik is like it came out of the whatever words come out of the mouth of a tzaddik is as if it was those words came out of the mouth of a malach, meaning it came out of like a superpower, like a super heavenly power. Viola Rachel Umesa, Rachel gave birth to her 12th kid. Umesa, and she died. Shneimar says the pasuk vayhi betzis nafshak umesa. When her soul went out, she died. She died early because Yaakov even said whoever stole the trophim should die. Right? So the shaila is, Be'etzim, you know, why did she die? You know, Yaakov even made this klala that whoever stole it should die, but Yaakov even didn't know that Rachel stole it. So then, like, why is it like Rachel's fault? Rachel thought she was doing a good thing. She thought she was doing a good thing. She was getting rid of Avodah Zarah from her father's house. She did it so that the Truffim wouldn't tell Lavan that Yaakovina ran away. She had good intentions. So why did Yaakovina's curse work on her? Hashem should have stopped the curse from working. So the Tzra Amar, which is Rabbi Avram Saba, who was one of the people who was kicked out of Spain. He was in 1492. He was one of the leaders then. He wrote a sefer called Tzra Hamar on Chumash. So over there in Tzra Hamar, he writes that the reason why she died was because of this klala and the fact that she caused pain to her father by stealing the trophim. That's what made it die. Being that, like, just the klala alone, you know, okay, you could say that she had good intentions, so that would counterbalance the klala that Yaakovina put on whoever stole it. But the fact that she also caused pain to her father, even though what she did was the right thing, could be, but she caused pain, at the end of the day, she caused pain to her father, so that made it, there was like a kitrug against her, and that's why she died early. That's what Bavram Saba says. But Leo Meizmi over here says a little bit different part. He says that really these two reasons why Rachel stole the Truffim, they're not good reasons. He says, because what's the first reason? Because you don't want the Truffim to tell Lavan that Yaakovina ran away? So what? So you're believing in the Truffim more than you're believing in Hashem? Hashem told Yaakovina, go back to Eretz Yisrael, right? So either the Truffim are going to tell Lavan that you ran away. Okay, who cares? Hashem told you to go, so I'm doing what Hashem said. Hashem will take care of it. Hashem will stop the Truffim from speaking or something like that. Or do it in a way that you know, that's not going to make trouble. So why do you have to like go figure a way to work out with the Truffim that everything is going to work out when I'm following what Hashem said? Just forget about the Truffim. Just go do what Hashem said.
That's why Rashi goes with on the second shot.
What?
Rashi goes with the second
child. I think you're right, Taka. So her cheshbon was fine. Besides the fact that Hashem could stop the Truffim from telling something to Lavan, she understood that. So she said, but you know what? Also, I want to help bring Lavan to the right path. So I want him to do tshuva. So you know what? I'll take the Truffim away, And then, you know, he won't have a shofar anymore. Maybe he'll do tshuva because he doesn't have any of these magical things. Especially like what we said before, the bad could be bad than love and belief in Hashem. Just that he got caught up in these things. We'll try to be mekatzer over here. So what happens? So instead, she takes it. So the Rabbi Elul Meizner says, no, what she should have done is left the Truffin, and it would have been a bigger nace that the Truffin won't tell Lavan what happened, and then Lavan will realize on his own that Hashem has more power than the Truffin, and then he'll become a Baal Tshuva on his own. Rather, instead, you know, Rachel tried to push it, and she tried to do it earlier than it was supposed to happen to try to bring Lavan into doing Tshuva. So Rabbi Elul Meizner says that, Mida Keneged Mida, she wanted to push Lavan to rejecting Avodah Zarah faster than what Hashem had intended. So therefore, she lost her life faster than originally intended.
It doesn't sound like Mida Keneged Mida.
I know, it's a little bit forced explanation. That's what he said.
Difficult.
One more nakuda. We'll end up with this. It's a slightly side thing, but the Zayis Ranan, my favorite sefer, I guess, on the Yalkut Shemaini in Bereshis, Remez Kuflamet, right? The Zayis Ranan written by the Mogen Avram. So the Zayis Ranan asks Akasha. He says like this: Yaakov Avinu. He says we all know that Yaakov Avinu was a kohen. Okay, Yaakov Avinu was a kohen. It's actually explicit in the Medrash Yalkut Shemaini later on Kuflamet Beis in the name of Medrash Avkir, but it says that Hashem said that Malch Michoel is a kohen in the Shemayim and Yaakov Avinu is a kohen in the Eretz. So we spoke about earlier about Avram Avinu being a kohen in Perek Ches and Perek Lamed Aleph, whatever. But the idea is like this: is Yaakov Avinu was a kohen. Okay, fine. Yaakov Avinu is a kohen. Let's go with that assumption. Fine. Yaakov Avinu is a kohen. So what's the problem? The problem is that Trofim, what do we say Trofim are? It's a head of a person, right? It's a head of a person, a dead person. Yeah, it's a head of a person. A person is Metame Tumas Oil. So he asks, how could Rachel steal the Trofim? If Yaakov Avinu is a Kohen, so she's making Yaakov Avinu be over the Israel of a Kohen becoming Tame Tumas Meis because she's going to bring this Trofim and be in the same tent as Yaakov Avinu, and then Yaakov Avinu is going to become Tame Tumas Meis because of the oil.
I'll push the red button.
What?
I'll push the red button.
You push the red button or what?
Yeah, the red button was every case explanation when you got stuck and stuff. That was before Matan Torah, that's it.
Oh, before Matan Torah.
That's the red button.
That's the red button. So he says two Tirutzim. We'll say it quickly. The first Tirutz is based on Gemara Yevamos, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The Heiliger Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. They say his Yartzeit was Lag B'Omer. I don't know if it's true or not, but Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Said, famous words of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It says in the Pasuk, Adam Kiyamus Be'ohel, an Adam, when he dies in a tent, it makes anyone in the tent tummy for 7 days, right? What's the word Adam? It says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Atem Kurim Adam Ve'en Ovid Kachavim Kuri Adam. You, Jews, are called Adam, Goyim are not called Adam. So a guy doesn't have tumma, a dead guy, a corpse of a dead guy, is not metame tumas oil. So the Zayis Ranan says that this trophim that Lavan had, it wasn't a trophim that was made from the head of a firstborn Jewish male. It was not the head of a firstborn person that he made the trophim into. It was a guy, so it's not Matam Tumas Oil. So it's not a problem that Yaakov will become Tomei to it, because there's no Tumas Oil by a guy. That's the first Teretz. The second Teretz, he says,
there is a watch.
What?
There was a watch and not a head.
Similar, close. He says, granted you could say that, but he says a different... Because he's going on our medrash, which is understanding that it's a head. But he says like this: he says that what did Rachel steal? Rachel stole the gold plate that had the shem in it. She just stole that thing that they put inside the mouth. She didn't steal the whole head, right? That's what that's what he wants to tie up. And then
goes well. The apostle just says Elohai.
Why?
Because it's his name.
Whose name?
I don't know. If it goes with the same name of the Zohar, it's the name of the Zohar.
See, the name of it. Here.
The whole device wouldn't be the Zohar.
Yeah, okay. I'll upon him. So the Zayis Ranan wants to say that she didn't steal the whole contraption. She just stole that little, the gold plate that had the shame written on it. That's what she stole. And then he says, I'll bring you a proof to it. Well, I love Mamish with this. Because the proof is that it says in the Pasuk that she put it on her, underneath her when she sat on the camel. And it says that if you're gonna tell me that it's like a whole person, right? So like, how could you take like a whole person and put it underneath you when you're sitting on a camel? Oh my, it was like something small, so it must have been this like little gold thing. The science writer is assuming that it was either a whole person or it was this little gold thing. But our medrash seems to be saying that it was talking about a head. It's like a head is not a whole person. It's just a head. But he's understanding that it's like a whole person. Like we said from the Rishon over there in Shmuel Aleph, when we're talking about David and Melech, that it sounds like the trophim was like a whole a mannequin, like a whole statue of a person, not just a head. Even though he's going in our Medrash over here, which it seems that it's just a head. Agutavach.